De Niro, Pacino, Gugino, Neutrino, Maraschino, Gran Torino. We discuss Righteous Kill. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Elliot Kalin.
And I'm Megan O'Neill.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey.
That mellifluous lady voice that you're hearing.
That doesn't sound like Stuart R.
No.
Wellington.
Who let this gal into the room?
Well,
huh?
Well, we did, technically. Oh, I mean, right. I did.
You did, Dan. It's your house.
I unlocked the door and showed you up to my apartment.
What a mistake.
Whoa. Hey, you're a married man.
What a mistake that was.
Well, my wife's at the bar.
Whoa!
Oh, even worse.
Trouble in paradise, huh?
Well, she's visiting with friends, but sure, you can interpret it how you like.
He just did air quotation around friends.
And visiting.
Yeah. Stuart,
and visiting.
Stuart isn't here.
Stuart's at what he calls dude night.
Last week.
I feel like I'm at dude night.
Yeah?
But I like it.
Well, these are different dudes.
Oh, okay.
Than he hangs out with.
We aren't playing a fantasy version of football. And by fantasy version of football, I don't mean fantasy football. I mean a game where a bunch of orcs and goblins and elves
play football.
And stuff, yeah, play football. Not real orcs, but like minifigs.
Because those are expensive. Those are hard to get.
And little, hard to keep.
Little pewter or lead figurines that have been painted play football with each other. And that's what Stuart does on Wednesdays, ladies and gentlemen.
I like to all think he also play acts the interviews in the locker room after the game.
Sir, why don't you put a towel on?
So there are a couple things you won't be hearing about tonight, among them the size of Stuart's penis.
Mm-hmm.
Talks about that?
The size of condoms that he buys.
Right.
Magnums, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's what he says.
Well, he recently switched over. We've been hearing a lot about that.
He's been telling us a lot about his amazing new Switch.
Wait, okay, but we're not supposed to be hearing about these things.
No, we're not.
No.
I will ask him that in confidence.
I was going to say we weren't going to hear about our leading lady's breasts, but Elliot might still contribute.
Well, just because it's a particular leading lady that I have an affection for.
But before that, let's introduce Megan, our...
not the leading lady breasts you were just talking about. No.
Our leading lady in the studio here.
Oh.
Which is my apartment. Megan.
Very nice.
Who are you?
I'm Megan O'Neill. I have an older sister, Jill, that lives in Jersey City.
Okay, unnecessary information.
Oh, okay. All right.
Keep it moving. Let's
okay,
go.
All right. So I was born in Nebraska.
Keep it moving.
Okay.
Again.
And I was raised in Kalamazoo. Okay.
Keep going.
I mostly live in Park Slope.
All right.
There we go.
And what do you do?
Go Brooklyn. I work with Dan.
Not professionally.
Not professionally, but in a creative sense. We collaborate together on the Mr. White Pants Comedy Hour.
Which is a very funny show.
Which is a very funny sketch show. Check it out. www.MrWhitePantsComedy.com. And I actually suggest that you go to MrWhitePants.com just to see what happens.
And you're also some sort of a buccaneer.
I'm
sail the seven seas.
Yes, I'm a story pirate as well. I work with a group doing writing workshops in elementary schools, and then we get to act out the kids' stories. Very funny stuff. I'm going to be gone for a month touring with the Story Pirates.
That's not what I imagine Story Pirates to be. I imagine...
You imagine more like Somali Pirates.
Yeah, I imagine
You're
a group
wrong.
Of violent men, mainly bearded perhaps, who, you know, pull up next to a library.
You've almost got it right.
Yeah, and they go into the books like Gumby would, and they take over the stories.
Exactly.
Basically... Yeah, basically
like they're
close.
Like they're just hopping on Pop, and then the story pirates come along and kill Pop, and they take the kids and sell them. And
it's more like we pillage the stories from the children themselves because they have better ideas than we ever.
Well, you
and
make
then
the
murder
kids,
the kids.
And then we murder. Oh no!
You make the kids sign a work for hire agreement. They make almost nothing. You own almost all the rights.
Anything anything that they write during the Story Pirates is the intellectual property of you.
That's right.
The Story Pirates.
That's right, except the songs that are composer rights, Eli Bolin. But actually, John Stewart is a big supporter of Story Pirates.
I'll ask him that
and
see.
Kristen Schaal is a Story
that.
Pirate.
I'll ask her that.
Go ahead.
All right.
She never mentioned it to me.
Stop dropping names.
She was dropping them.
I'm not dropping anything. I don't know these people.
Who did I meet?
What's a famous person you know besides me? Take that. R-O-C-K in the USA. Haven't pulled that one out for a while.
Anyway, we watched a movie tonight.
I know. Oh, did we ever.
For a change.
I don't know if what we watched tonight could be called a movie.
Well, hold on.
It was more a collage. Oh,
let me reset this for people who may be joining us. Here at the Flophouse, we watch a movie, a bad movie.
Or at that.
One that we assume
we watch
should
a
be
movie.
Bad.
You would think a good one for the enjoyment.
No.
Nope.
Au contraire. Suffice to say, it is the opposing type.
And let me clear up something about the title, by the way. Some people have pointed out that movies that we've watched in the past haven't been technically flops in the blockbuster sense of the word. In
the
box
financial
office.
Success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That suggests there's only one measure of success, and that is the almighty dollar. Whereas we encompass critical flops as well.
I think we just kind of
so in your face, listeners,
things that are generally bad.
Yeah,
in your face, loyal listeners,
suck it.
All two of you. How many loyal listeners?
We've got at least three.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm imagining listeners across the world in the middle of their jogs, pulling their iPod out and throwing it into the pond,
throwing it into lakes, and electrocuting fish. This,
delicious fish.
Wait, did that happen in this film? Because it seems like maybe it could have.
I don't know. This movie was about 1,000 hours long. This movie was both a critical and commercial flop.
In this case, it was not a success.
It was a failure on every level.
Righteous Kill.
Righteous
dun,
Kill.
Dun, dun, dun.
This, and I don't know if you guys remember the posters that were up for this movie all over New York.
I don't.
But it just said Righteous Kill in big letters and had Robert De Niro and Al Pacino in this like tough guy
glowering.
Photo, glowering at you, the looker, as
the
if
looker
to say,
on.
"Yeah, we made a movie called Righteous Kill. What of it?
What of it? You gonna come see it? No? Okay, fine.
You gonna go see a movie, or else I don't know. We're old. We can't do that much.
Yeah, it's about two elderly cops."
Like,
their
I
adventures.
Wish they had made a comedy about two guys who used to be Dirty Harry type cops who are now too old for their work and refused to retire. That would have been very funny, and they would have been very good in it.
Yep.
It also would have made more
put
sense.
Put Morgan Freeman in it, I guess.
And if it was called, like, Morgan Freeman's in too much stuff.
All right.
He needs to dial back, become exclusive again.
Put Bill Murray in it.
Yeah, why Bill Murray could have been like the police commissioner.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just a small character really part.
But that's me. I think every movie needs more Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I have often thought that while watching any movie, pornography,
Schindler's
List, anything.
Anything on YouTube. Like
I don't know. I mean, like, I think that if Bill Murray was in pornography.
Werner Herzog film.
Like, qualitatively it would be better if Bill Murray was just, like, standing off to the sides, cracking jokes about the sexual acts.
White Russian.
There's so many,
I think it would
so
be,
many Stan Brakhage experimental films.
It would be
upset.
What
Maybe
you would call
Bill Murray.
A boner buster. To have Bill Murray there.
And who knows better about busting things than Bill Murray?
It's true. He ain't afraid of no boner.
Well, that's who you call. The old commercials go, if you've got an erection for more than 4 hours, who are you going to call? Oh. It's boner busters.
Boner busters.
Yeah. Because it could be painful
the
otherwise.
The priapism experts. They show up with their...
Guys, I thought we weren't going to talk about cocks tonight.
We didn't say that. We said Stewart's.
Oh,
we were going to talk about
specifically. Okay.
Other people's painful four-hour erections we'll talk about.
Just not Stewart's.
But anyway...
so enthusiastic to talk about Righteous Kill, as you can
you can see. Righteous Kill was not a hilarious comedy about two elderly policemen.
I'm not even sure exactly what it was about.
It was a thriller about two elderly policemen.
Elliot, why
which seems like an oxymoron, and it is.
Yeah,
you're known for being able to follow even the most unfollowable of films.
Yeah, then apparently describe them in overmuch detail,
as was said
in the last episode.
I think Stewart said that.
When Brock described Paul Blart as a movie about a man who gets the chance to be a policeman and turns it down. And that was the entire plot.
Yeah,
which recently I referred to King Kong as a movie about how hard it is to put on a show on Broadway. That seems to be as apt a description. I think there's a certain flavor to the plot of a film, but apparently I take too long in saying.
No. I'm encouraging you to summarize this. I mean, briefly, yes.
Al Pacino. Okay, Al Pacino and Robert De Niro have been partners for about 100 years as policemen.
And one of them has dentures.
We'll let you guess which one. Robert De Niro is named Turk. Al Pacino is named Rooster. Those are nicknames. Robert De Niro is also in a very kind of brutal sex relationship with Carla Gugino, who is a forensics person with the police. And there are also two other detectives, John Leguizamo and Donnie Wahlberg. Because
you may remember from The Sixth Sense.
The Sixth Sense, right.
Yeah.
As well as New Kids on the Block.
Right.
And Brian Dennehy.
Very thin in The Sixth Sense.
And Brian Dennehy is the police chief, and that's the entirety of the police of New York City, is this group.
That's it.
There's someone who's killing criminals who beat the charges and didn't go to jail and leaving cryptic poems describing the people's crimes on the body. That opens with Robert De Niro confessing to these crimes and continues to confess throughout the film.
In fuzzy black and white video footage.
Mm-hmm. But things may not be as they seem. Robert De Niro is like the loose cannon cop who beats people up.
Yep.
And Al Pacino is like the loose cannon cop
who
plays chess and makes wisecracks. They're both bad at being cops. They're both too old. Should I give away the ending? Should I say what happened?
Oh, please. Go. No, keep going.
I think
there are a couple red herrings. They go through a lot of rigmarole to try and find the killer. And at the end,
you have to clarify. At a certain point, they think, I know who's doing this.
Right.
It's got to be a cop.
Yeah, it's got to be a cop.
Maniac cop, if you will.
Right. They don't say maniac cop, but they should have. And John Leguizamo says, I think it was Robert De Niro who did it.
Right.
And it would have been a better movie if they referred to each other by their real names.
Right. It would have made more sense.
I bet it was actor Robert De Niro.
I think Robert De Niro did it. And they set up a sting operation and they catch Robert De Niro, but it turns out he's not the guy who did it.
But what was that scene before that when they were waiting in the car and that weird guy came out of nowhere?
That was Robert De Niro. It seemed like he was trying to throw them off the track.
Oh, okay.
So he said,
yeah, please explain this to me. Saw this movie. But
he's like, it's not a cop. It's not a cop. It's not a cop. And they're like, no, it's a cop. It's a cop. It's a cop. He's like, it's not a cop. It's not a cop. It's not a cop.
That seems to be the whole script of the movie.
Literally,
I was
John Leguizamo.
A lot of the movie is people shouting the same phrases over and over at each other.
Yeah,
at the simultaneously. But see,
with overlapping Altman-esque dialogue.
Yeah, and ketchup in the background.
And there's a lot of bottles of ketchup sitting on tables. But De Niro says to them, "You think it's a cop? Well, here's a cop who got fired, and he thinks he got a bum deal." He was involved in all these cases where he was around at the time. Mm. Maybe he did it. So they go to find that guy, and he says, "I've got an alibi."
I was in Brazil.
And he disappears from the film.
That's what it was.
Okay. Wait, he was in Brazil?
Not the movie. That's...
I was in Brazil.
I was in Brazil.
I met up with Terry Gilliam and made it off.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end, it turns... So they think Robert De Niro did it.
Right.
Robert De Niro seems pretty suspicious. He's in a relationship with Carla Gugino where they rape each other.
He rapes her. It's not that equitable. Right.
It's really horrible.
There's one who's dominant and one who's submissive.
It's really horrible.
And Robert De Niro is not the submissive in the relationship.
But I think he is the submissive.
Well,
really not the one in control of the submissive?
Well, that's the thing. He plays the dominant role in the game, but it's very obvious that he does what Carla Gugino wants him to do.
That's right.
And that he doesn't like this necessarily. This is what she wants to do. But in the end, it turns out Al Pacino did it the whole time.
No!
It was the other character who did it.
There were two main characters, and the one that you thought did it
didn't do it.
Yeah.
And thus it was the other main character.
And Al Pacino makes Robert De Niro read from his crazy person confession notebook, and that's why his therapist gave him, the police therapist. Then Robert De Niro shoots Al Pacino reluctantly, and the movie is over.
The end.
Yeah. The end. And Robert De Niro, even though he was a brutal, aggressive cop, redeems himself by coaching a girl's softball team at the end.
I don't understand. Now that we've summarized, we can dig into the meat of this. And I
the meat of this is a little girl's softball team.
I really don't understand.
Let's just say this was a terrible movie. Everything about it is bad. Two of the legendary actors of the second half of the 20th century.
Right,
and
they
both are shit in it, and they're really bad, and they have no chemistry, and they're just old, bad, not good, bad
old
things.
Bags.
Well, let's not jump ahead of ourselves.
Sorry.
Right? Let's not, you know.
And Carla Gugino, of course, looks beautiful.
Yeah. She lights up the screen.
She does light up the screen.
She's a beautiful woman.
She's got an old world classic style of looks
mm-hmm.
that you don't find in so many of these slutty stars these
means
days.
That he enjoys her curves. That's what Ellie is
saying. Well,
that's
part of it, but also just like the way her face looks is not.
Yeah.
It looks like you could see pictures of her and think they were from the 40s.
She's very pretty.
Just the way her face is shaped.
And a talented actress.
And she's but not necessarily in this movie.
Not of her own fault. She's still better than De Niro and Pacino, but everyone in it is bad.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I would agree with that.
But to go back to the girl softball.
Oh, but to go.
Why is that in this movie?
Because
that's
he's
a question that
he
I
was coaching
the
police soft, the NYPD softball right. team for his precinct at least.
Mm. Right.
And I think this was a sign that he's given up his aggressive ways. We see him getting into a fight
yes.
with the umpire. This is he's given it up. Yeah. Now he's giving back to the children. It's the mm-hmm. future next generation. Maybe he and Carly Gina are going to have some kids who go to college when he's dead because he'll be in his 90s.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm. that's a dream. It's the American dream.
He's let go of the past, and now he's free to be around children.
Yeah, let's,
okay. He's free to be around children.
Yeah.
As we all hope to be one day, I guess.
He's free to be you and me. Let's get back to the fact that Carla Gugino not only enjoys rough sex, but she enjoys rough sex with a man approximately twice her age.
Yeah, definitely old enough to be her father.
I don't know about
if not father and a half.
All right, well... I'm
old
saying,
enough to be her father.
How old
yes.
do you think? Yeah. Like, Carla Gugino is somewhere. In...
She's around 37 years old.
Yeah,
I think.
She's in.
Is she?
I believe
man,
so.
She looks great.
Yeah, Robert De Niro is
Robert
not
Niro
74
is like,
years
no,
old.
No, but he's like 65.
Yeah, he's in his 60s.
I wonder
certainly.
If Robert De Niro is younger than my father.
So it's.
I don't know.
I don't, my dad's old.
I have to ask Robert.
Sorry,
De Niro.
Like on the scale of
old
but of this... Hollywood relationships,
it's
of...
not as bad as like. Larry King and his wife.
I wouldn't right. know about
There's
that.
There's probably a bigger age difference between Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones than between these two. They're 30 years apart.
But the difference is we don't have to see it on film.
We will, though.
But we
don't have to see them enacting their rape fantasies
yeah.
on
right.
film.
The rape Are fantasy yeah. aspect of it is very
it's
distasteful.
Very, it's very strange.
Well, look, you know, no. Whatever gets you off behind closed doors. I
mean,
just don't want to see
Mazel Tov.
Robert De Niro
oh, so if
pertaining
it was...
to rape Carla Gugino on film. That is not something that I want projected up onto my eyeballs and then therefore into my brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had to say that it's not like there's a graphic scene.
No.
It's just the implication
no.
of it
right.
is horrifying.
Of that relationship. And you know, I'm going to say this. I didn't really like Meet the Parents at all. But then after
I
seeing...
I am with you.
But after seeing this movie, I find Robert De Niro's character in that a lot more easy to watch.
Well, can I say something about Meet the Parents?
Oh,
yes, and then
please
let's talk
do.
About something about Righteous Kill that's not rape related.
Or about 50
okay.
Cent.
About
yeah, 50 Cent is in this 50. Movie too, as a drug dealer club owner named Spider.
Spider. Anyway.
Meet the Parents like falls into like
everyone's
weird...
named after an animal in this movie.
I didn't realize that. And
see,
I feel like
and
an
the
idiot.
Birds, the two bird
birds,
police officers,
right. Turk
eat the arachnid
rooster.
Spider.
It's a stretch.
All right.
But it could work.
And they should have called
it's
him Cricket.
It's a stretch in the way that a bad screenwriter might have
yeah,
actually
there
thought
you go.
Of that.
That makes
and
sense.
Deliberately done it. But Meet the Parents, it falls in that category of comedy where I actually enjoy the comedy of awkwardness, you know, like the original Office or its ilk. But what I don't enjoy. Is a comedy that's entirely based around a good-hearted person having their life systematically ruined in some way. And Meet the Parents just seem to be like, okay, well, we're introduced to
right,
sweet Ben Stiller,
right.
who wants to marry this lady, his lady friend. We will see him embarrassed
Fail.
Over and over again.
Yeah,
that's why I
for
never
the
liked
next
2 hours.
The
vacation movies.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's like, you know.
Not the Christmas Vacation one? You
Christmas
like
Vacation is the worst one.
Oh, no.
But it's the same
like
thing where it's
the
like.
The worst one in a series that includes Vegas Vacation.
Oh, I
right.
forgot about
Come
Vegas
on,
Vacation.
No.
Christmas Vacation is the second worst one.
Okay.
But where Chevy Chase no. is not a bad guy. Like, he's not a great guy. It's just, it's like, oh, I can't wait to take my family on vacation. And apparently that is the biggest crime you can commit in the universe.
Well, when you're trying to go to Wally World. Yes.
By the way, Mr. John Hughes.
Oh, he passed away, didn't he?
Yeah.
You really don't want to talk about Righteous Kill.
Well, I just want to say, you know, the man wrote Vacation, and he also wrote the National Lampoon story
oh.
that Vacation was based
oh,
on.
I didn't realize that. He wrote a lot of stuff.
You should look it up on the internet, because it's interesting to see. I mean, like, he wrote the story and he wrote the screenplay, so it's not that strange that they're in line, but you rarely see, like, a five-page story that is so closely aligned to the movie that then was later made of it.
Mm.
So, in memoriam, John Hughes.
John
oh, what
Hughes.
A fitting memorial.
Why don't you go online?
This brief mention.
I'm sure that's all he ever wanted.
Yeah.
I will say about that, someone said to me today that they don't like Ferris Bueller's Day Off because
really?
His parents are so nice to him, there's no reason for him to mess with them.
He's not really messing with them.
Yeah. I would say he's not messing with them. And also, like, they're not very good parents. Like, even if they're nice, they have no idea what's going on with him.
And
they
don't pay attention to him. Sister.
Yeah, they're not good. They're very bad to the sister. That's true. Like,
well, the sister's Jennifer Grey.
So. What? Oh, so that's just supposed to excuse
it. Wow, interesting.
And she makes out with Charlie Sheen, so she gets what's coming
to her. We just recapped Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, we just recapped all the important points of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Anyway.
See, that's what happens when you don't go through a plot in detail. People think the movie is about Jennifer Grey and Charlie Sheen's relationship.
Yep.
So Righteous Kill is a bad movie. It's very poorly shot. It's very poorly edited. It's very poorly written.
Is it ugly.
It's completely confusing, too.
And it doesn't. And it's confusing. Well, if you're talking through it, it makes it more confusing. We've learned that on the Flophouse. But it is confusing. Like, the characters do things illogically for, you know, and have no reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen, and you don't know why. And it's because the movie is trying to create a sense of suspense in you. But it just comes off as like, why did we see that?
Yeah.
Why did that happen?
Well, De Niro gets super agitated by the idea that it might be a cop who's behind all these killings. And this is obviously a red herring to make us think, okay, De Niro did it. That along with the fact that we first see him confessing.
Right.
that was the larger red herring. But it's never really explained why he's so agitated, other than I guess you are supposed to assume he just has pride in being a police officer.
Maybe, or maybe he has an idea that Rooster did it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you can't kill the Rooster.
Al Pacino's character has one of the great quirks of movies, which is that he's full of stupid trivia. And as someone who's full of stupid trivia, like, I can understand, but it's like, there's a scene where he's talking to Brian Dennehy, and Brian Dennehy's like, it's going to take 2 light years to do this.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, actually, Chief, light years are a measure of distance, not of time. It's like, great, who cares? Why is...
The thing about the light years, though, like, I feel like that, again, is like the screenwriter at home, like, working through the Righteous Kill screenplay, like, working on it.
Yeah.
And then, like, he takes a break to watch Star Wars, and he's annoyed all over again at the use of parsecs as a unit of time. And he's like, I'm going to write something in.
But it's very close. Similar to that.
And then that'll show George Lucas.
Yeah, that'll show the world.
Retroactively.
But it's... Oh, it's such a poorly, like, the editing in the movie is bad, and it's incoherent at times, but also, like, it's one of those movies that feels, it's like, we better make this look dynamic, so we'll throw all sorts of crazy shit around, and the camera will whoosh for no reason, and...
Except for it's always whooshing to something really ugly.
Yes.
I've never seen so much linoleum in a movie, so much, like, just ugly tiling.
Parking lots.
It reminds me of when 12 Monkeys came out. I remember seeing that and thinking at the time, like, the world this movie is in is really ugly. But it was ugly in a way like it's supposed to be because it's, you know, society is crumbling to a certain extent. So even the scenes set in the present don't look very, you know, the settings don't look very good. But the movie is still shot well. So, like, you know that the world looks ugly, but the movie is not ugly.
Right.
Whereas this, it's like everything looks ugly and it's shot ugly.
Yeah, everything has a fluorescent light.
Yeah, well, the moral linoleum, this... like you were saying, or just, like, crappy.
This film is just trying to tell us.
In the climax of the film, Robert De Niro is wearing baggy sweatpants and a baggy hooded sweatshirt, all gray with sweat stains
on
it.
He looks like a grandmother out for a power walk.
That's probably what that amounted to.
He should be walking around a mall at 6:30 a.m.
Well, the look of this movie is telling us, Elliot, that the world is a cesspool. It's an insight fitting to a seventh grader, say. Yeah,
it is a movie that hates people.
Seventh grader.
There's all these parts where De Niro is like, you're hearing voiceover of him talking about how he killed people.
Yeah.
And it's him reading Al Pacino's notes, but you don't know that. It sounds like his inner monologue. And he's talking about how, like, he sees crime everywhere. And the whole time, you're just like, oh, Taxi Driver was such a good movie. This is so not as good as that.
Why am I watching this?
I could be watching that movie.
Or Meet the Parents.
Yeah.
I could be watching The Swap. One of his other early bad films.
I've never seen The Swap.
Well, don't. It's not very
good. Oh, okay. All right.
So, Megan, I bet that...
could be watching Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Oh.
I bet that Al Pacino had a really good reason for killing all those people. I mean, like, he was a cop. And then to, like, turn around and kill everybody. I bet he must have had a really good reason. So, what was that?
Elliot, what was it?
It seems to be that he was crazy.
Oh, that's it. He was crazy.
Well, technically, he says early in the film, he and Robert De Niro planted a gun on a suspect who was going to get off because he had a fake alibi, but they knew he did it.
Right.
And he says at the end to Robert De Niro, "You were my idol. You were the best cop I'd ever seen."
Oh, that's right.
"When you planted that gun..."
This guy's good.
You know, yeah, saying, I don't have to pay that close attention to it. "When you planted that gun, I lost faith."
Yep.
"You showed me that cops can be bad too. So I decided to kill people, and it turned out I enjoyed doing it." Yeah. So he is crazy. It's just
so
a
that's
dumb,
why Dan.
That's okay. why he did it, but that's why he started.
Okay, the fall from grace.
So
classic.
The fact that his partner set someone up meant that then thereafter he had to shoot a bunch of people.
I guess that there was no law, or that they were outside of the law.
It's vigilante
so
justice.
So he stared into the abyss,
right?
And
not
realized,
only did the abyss
and he
stare
shot
back,
the wrong Ruski.
Mm-hmm.
He did shoot the wrong Ruski. And he shoots one of these guys is a Russian criminal, and he shoots him 6 times.
That's
and
right.
Fails to kill him. He just puts him in the hospital, mm-hmm, where there's an Indian doctor who's very impressed at how many bullets he took out of this guy. But then
who's the guy who's the Indian guy from Office Space?
It wasn't.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
He's
Samir.
He's great. I think he's great in Office. I mean, he's very good.
Was
in
he
his
Indian
film
or
too.
is he Arab?
Oh. Good question. I don't know.
You've exposed our racism.
No, I think I've exposed our oblivious whiteness.
Basically.
But,
definitely.
You were going to talk about
it. I just realized I'm the only non-Irishman
at
this table.
Wait, are you guys white? Oh, you're not Irish?
The Irish
The
Irish were, you know, spat upon.
That's right.
And
boo-hoo.
Yeah.
Cry me a river.
Jewish
people have had it pretty easy.
Yeah.
We were the minority before we knew
a while
the word
back,
for it.
You know,
that's right.
Yeah. Anyway.
Not today.
Not today.
Not today where we have every advantage.
That's
listen,
right.
In America,
because we knew how to do one thing well, and that's procreate.
In America, we have so much racial strife. I didn't mean to reopen these wounds. But
you did.
What you meant to talk about was the guy's method of trying to get someone
yes,
out of a coma.
Is this Russian guy is seems to be in a coma, and one of the cops just goes up to him and goes, hey. It's like,
yeah,
oh.
Literally, just like putting his fingers up in front of him and snapping.
Snap.
Hey.
And I wish that I wanted the doctor to be like, oh, we haven't tried that. Thanks. Thanks for your miracle cure.
The sarcastic doctor.
the snapping fingers.
Oh, great.
We were busy using a defibrillator.
God. I learned that. That's first year medical school. I can't believe I forgot about it.
The snapping fingers.
Where are my smelling salts? Doesn't matter. I've got these fingers with me all the time.
When I was applying the adrenaline to keep his heart beating, I forgot to say, hey.
Oh, that was a good one.
Now there's beer in my nose now.
I don't know.
Irish.
Don't worry about
beer
it.
In my nose.
It'll
now
just be absorbed into my bloodstream all the faster.
Oh, and now that you say that in my nose, I'm thinking about the girl.
The girl who
the
was
girl
using
with
cocaine.
With the primo cocaine that, that Spider gave her. That's the only word she used to describe it.
Primo.
Primo.
Yeah.
Well, poor,
she's a high-class lawyer who was also a coke addict.
That's right.
Whole House of Cards started tumbling down was...
was it?
This woman
that it feels like, literally, it feels like we watched 13 episodes of a TV show,
yeah,
an hour-long drama, and I'm like, oh yeah, that happened at the beginning of season one of Righteous Kill.
They're cutting up the cocaine in the men's bathroom.
This is a movie that is, what, an hour and 45 minutes long, and mm-hmm, it feels like it's...
It's epic.
I think like 10,000 BC or 7 Pounds were the only movies that felt like they took more time than
yeah,
this.
But the woman offers De Niro some cocaine.
They're in the bathroom. He's in the bathroom of a hip hop club.
Yeah.
Right, in Harlem, the 404 Club that used to be a bank,
and it's run by Spider.
That's yeah, right. Who's 50 Cent?
And now that happened, De Niro can use her to as an informant.
That's
and
right.
You know, like to wire her up.
Yeah.
Put her in with Spider. And I found this very interesting because apparently in the world of Righteous Kill, very wealthy, high-powered corporate lawyers
yep,
get their drugs directly from the drug kingpin.
In person.
Yeah. They go.
Four ounces.
Buddies. What? They're like, hey, Spider, let me in. They're like, oh, okay, I'll let you into my
sanctum sanctorum.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where, by the way,
hey,
the
Melissa,
police are just next door.
The police
right,
seem to have rented out
ridiculous
apartment space above his place in the building. It's like he had a loft for rent, and the police rented it out, and he doesn't understand how they keep busting him. Yeah. But
they just have cups up to the wall
yep,
with their ear on one side.
Even closer than the lives of others.
Fancy.
Fancy.
Lives of others.
Mm-hmm. Great movie.
It's no Righteous
it's
Kill.
It's no Righteous Kill.
No, Righteous Kill's in a class of its own. Yeah, they send her as to wear a wire to catch spiders selling her drugs, and things don't go so well.
They don't go as planned.
Yeah.
That's for
but
sure.
But she gets shot in the shoulder, and she takes it in stride. She's a corporate lawyer. Right.
Come on. She just bleeds from the mouth a little bit.
She had so much Primo stuff in her system that she didn't even feel it.
The thing was, like, she didn't die.
No, she was fine. She went to the hospital.
So she, there was
a shot of her reading a book, kind of irritatingly, like, ugh. I gotta read a book now that I'm in the hospital.
And I can only turn it with my left hand.
So she didn't even serve, like, the plot motivation of, you know, giving De Niro a reason to, like, be enraged about
it. He's a mad dog. He's like a pit bull on crack.
And then she just sort of disappears.
As they said. Yeah, she disappears because she's not necessary anymore.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, what were they going to keep her around in the plot for? Like, she wants revenge on Spider? Like, that's also a scene where...
Maybe she could be drawn into Carla Gugino's sex games. Or maybe I'm just influenced by the fact that because of a Time Warner cable screw-up, I now have Cinemax in my house. Free Cinemax.
For a month.
So everything is a potential setup for some sort of devious sex game.
Yeah. Or some kind of pornographic parody of a recent Hollywood blockbuster film. Mm-hmm. Shot in someone's backyard / rec room.
Or not so recent, like Playmate of the Apes.
Yeah, that's true. That is a parody of the Planet of the Apes series as a whole.
Or the movie Tarzina, Jiggle in the Jungle, which I'm not even sure what it is. Is it spoofing a Tarzan film? Is it spoofing Sheena, which is, you know, early 80s?
I have to assume that since Tar is in the name, that it's Tarzan that they're spoofing.
But what Tarzan movie are they spoofing? Are they spoofing
the one with
the one with
Casper Van Dien and Tarzan at the in the Lost City or whatever it was called? Tarzan at the Center of the Earth?
I thought maybe they were spoofing Greystoke.
Yeah, Greystoke, the Legend of Tarzan. Or the Legend of Greystoke, whatever it was called.
Megan's eyes are glazing over.
Yeah, I don't know the Tarzan movies.
Well,
nor do I know these homemade movies.
Let me explain
in rec rooms,
this is a very low budget softcore porn company that we're talking about. That does.
No, I think she doesn't know the Tarzan films.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know those
Johnny
either.
Weissmuller.
All right.
Olympic swimmer. He starred in many of these. The first one was directed by W.S. Van Dyke.
Yeah.
Woody Van Dyke.
And these are the low budget.
Mia Farrow's mom is
the ape man.
Well, Mia Farrow's mom played Jane in the old
Tarzan and his mate.
Oh, yeah. No! I was wondering about the porns.
Oh, that's different. That's a company called Seduction Cinema.
I thought you were going to say Mia Farrow's mother was in the porn.
No.
And that would just be.
I don't know that she made any movies after Hannah and her sisters.
Tarzan and his
Mia Farrow's mom is in that.
Yeah, she plays Mia Farrow's mom.
Oh. What a stretch.
But anyway, I was going to say the scene where this informant gets shot involves 50 Cent knows she's wearing a wire.
Yeah.
That's right.
So the cops force, they go, we got to get her.
We gotta
and they
get, yeah.
force in their way in.
He's like, the cavalry's here.
Like,
they rang the doorbell.
They rang the doorbell and the guy's like, no, I'm not letting you in. And they're like, come on, we just want to talk. And he's like, okay, I'll let you in.
And he lets them in.
He's like, I know what to look for and where to look for it.
And 50 Cent has a big fat bodyguard.
Yes.
The character's name apparently is Stubby, according to the credits, or Stubbs. And the man who played him is named Fatso.
Is that true?
According to the credits.
Oh, wow.
Unless there's another character, unless that's Brian Dennehy's new stage name. Because he's a large man.
I think you should go for it. It's bold.
But, he's adopting the name of Dom DeLuise.
Well, Dom DeLuise isn't using it.
Yeah, sure.
So they go to get her. 50 Cent gives her up. They're leaving, and he goes, hey, here's your wire back, and throws it to them in the air. And as Al Pacino goes to catch it, the fat bodyguard, for some reason, pulls out his gun.
No, he's had his gun pulled already.
Oh, he's had his gun pulled. Well, shows himself with the
gun
pulled.
Right,
and they shoot him, and she gets in the crossfire. But it's literally one of these scenes where it's like, why did everyone start shooting their guns again?
Yep.
What was the reason for
this?
Yeah,
no, there were three people in the room. Out of those three, zero understood exactly like what had happened in that action sequence.
Yeah,
like,
but
why
also,
did shooting start? Who started?
Why did it start? And also, like, his bodyguard, like, he's a bodyguard for a drug dealer. He's probably not a great guy, but he's dead now. He was killed in the
line of duty.
In the line of duty.
That's
so like
that's the way the war on drugs works, Elliot.
I guess so. And Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. I guess that's when they need to go into counseling with the police psychologist.
Right.
It's very like. Flippantly handled, like, oh, that guy's dead now. Yeah.
And you know what?
Yeah.
This is a subplot that I didn't understand until I read the Wikipedia synopsis of the plot of Righteous Kill.
Oh.
Which is the...
this is like a David Lynch film, all
the
of a
whole
sudden.
Point of them going into counseling was that then they would write their feelings in those little notebooks.
Yes, in the little marble notebooks.
Which
they both got them.
Got tied up because De Niro didn't write anything in his notebook.
Right.
He's lazy.
He didn't give a shit about it. But Al Pacino was writing his confession the whole time.
Yeah. But they made it look like De Niro was
It all fit together.
Yeah.
It, like, all the puzzle pieces fell into place.
It's
by the way,
beautifully
all the,
done.
By the way, all the puzzle pieces falling into place. At the end of the movie, there's a sequence that is the all the puzzle pieces fall into place sequence.
Yeah.
And you can't see me over the medium of podcasting, but I'm making air quotes. Because all the puzzle pieces falling into place, the montage was not like, oh, of course, he said that and that meant that.
Yeah,
it was just... Now we're going to show you flashbacks of everyone being shot, and we're going to show you Al Pacino
shooting
them.
Yeah, because there are a couple times when people get shot, and they're like, oh, detective, it's... So you know it is
it's
a cop.
You.
It's
what are you.
You
doing here? Kapow, kapow.
Yeah.
You know? Well, there's a scene where...
He came to see me.
There's a scene where Carlo Gugino... Yeah, Carlo Gugino has been... Al Pacino also, for Lord knows what reason.
Mm-hmm.
This makes no sense. Beats up and rapes Carla Gugino, or at the very least beats up and takes her clothes off.
Yeah.
There's no reason for it.
Right.
And then tastefully drapes a shower curtain over her. But like, there's no reason for it. And then she calls Brian Dennehy and she's like, he was here.
He
did this. And Brian Dennehy's like, if that's true, well, I'll send somebody after him. We'll find him.
Okay.
Well, that's not enough. I'll go get him. And it's like, they're just going way out of their way to avoid saying the name of the man who did it because you're not supposed to know who it was yet.
That's
but it comes off as very stilted.
And, you know, I'm just remembering in the beginning there was the skateboarding pimp.
Oh, yeah. He got shot.
Played
Rambo.
By Rob Rambo.
And they refer to him as Rambo, the skateboarding pimp.
Played by...
I literally said those words.
Sounds like an insane clown posse character.
It really does. Played by...
That's a juggalo, if ever there was one.
Rob Drydek from the reality series Robin Big. He didn't do a bad job.
I don't know what that reality
series
is.
It's a great... It's actually very funny.
I don't like real life. I like fiction.
I like Righteous Kill.
Fiction like Righteous Kill. It was too real for me.
It was too real. That's what. That's why we have to pretend that it was fiction.
Shit just got real. Righteous Kill real.
Yeah.
Boom.
Does anyone else have anything to say before we move on to the next thing?
Don't watch this movie ever.
Well, no, that is.
I feel like Werner Herzog listening to the tape of Timothy Treadwell being eaten by a bear, saying, "Don't ever watch this. Take this tape and burn it. Don't ever watch it.
I won't, Werner."
Hi, it's Dan here. If you like listening to The Flophouse, why not visit us on the web at www.flophousepodcast.com, where you can find show notes, videos, fan art, and links to Wikipedia synopses of all the Flophouse films, so you can play along at home. If you're looking for more Flophouse stuff, check out our Facebook page, where you can discuss the show with other fans, or subscribe to our Twitter feed at TheFlophousePod. Your support helps us build an audience, so if you like the show, why not vote for us at Podcast Alley, or subscribe to the show on iTunes. And while you're there, take a moment to write a review. Links for everything can be found on the webpage. Lastly, we love hearing from you, so if you have thoughts, feedback, or suggestions, let us know at theflophousepodcast@gmail.com. Now back to the show. Yeah, the next part is where we make our final judgments on the movie.
Final judgments.
Righteous Kill.
I had to do both parts because Stuart's not here.
And we didn't let Megan know that some Foley was going to be required of her.
Sorry. Well, next time, maybe.
Okay.
So basically, we have three official categories, and those are, this is a good, bad movie, a movie that you enjoyed in its badness.
In its badness, okay.
A bad movie. A movie that should only be left up to the professionals like us.
Okay.
Or a movie that you kind of liked. You found some actual redeeming quality in it. And so, Megan, as the guest, I'll go to you.
I'm going to say this is a bad, bad movie.
Mm.
I found no redeeming quality in it. And I mean, it was fun to watch with you two professional gentlemen. But I feel
professional
like...
Professional gentlemen.
we're
escorts. Like we're dancers at a hall, and old ladies come by and pay us to dance.
Wait, who's your guys' pimp? Rambo, the skateboarding pimp?
Elliot, I've explained this to you. They don't pay us to dance. They buy a bottle of champagne for $50.
And we're encouraged by the help.
Sure.
By the management.
That's how it works.
I'm sorry. Okay. But you two professionals.
We're taxi dancers. That's what it is.
I just feel like the plot is so convoluted, I guess, and the shots are terrible. The story is not worth paying attention to.
This is a movie with
John Leguizamo. Is it this?
It's a movie with a fairly straightforward story that they go way out of their way to overcomplicate to the point where it doesn't make sense anymore.
And it makes you, when you're watching it, makes you think, it makes you hurt. Well, no, it just makes you think, wow, Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, not good actors, which is probably something that is not true.
If aliens found this,
well, it is, they would say, for the last 15 years, these are the two worst actors
maybe in human history.
In human history, that's right.
I don't understand. Like,
maybe
I can
not
see,
in alien history.
I can see why they're making this type of bad movie at their advanced age, because they didn't have the talent to graduate to better films by this point. Mm-hmm. You know?
I got to say, yeah, a bad, bad movie. This director, John Avnet, also made the Al Pacino opus 88 minutes.
Oh, which is the movie, again, where a minor plot point is that Al Pacino's semen has been sucked out of the corpse of a woman he did have sex with and then inserted into the corpse of a woman he didn't have sex with.
Oh, wow. I didn't know. I have not seen
that. I have to say, and where that was also a plot point in the film Presumed Innocent, which was not a bad movie.
I don't know.
So it could be used.
I'm saying that if that happened in a good movie, I'd be like, that's a disturbing thing. But in a bad movie, it's like, that's unnecessary.
That's a disturbing thing.
It's also a movie where a man has 88 minutes left to live, basically, and he spends much of it just hanging out in his apartment with Alicia Witt, not really doing much of anything, just kind of talking, just hanging out.
Just making cookies.
Yeah, well, and this movie was sold on, like, you know, you loved them in Heat. Yep. You wanted to see them in Heat. They were together in one scene in Heat.
What if Heat? What if that one scene was a whole movie?
Yeah. And I got to say, Heat's all right. It's about an hour too long, in my opinion. But it's a very, like, competently made movie. It's a thrilling movie in many ways. This movie, I had no idea what was happening from moment to moment. Yeah. And as you said, Elliot, they have no chemistry together, actually, Pacino and De Niro.
Well, it's Heat is like, even if they'd never made Heat, like, this is Travis Bickle, Jake LaMotta meeting, you know, Michael Corleone, Serpico in a movie. Like, this should be, even if they'd never done anything together, even if they've never made Godfather 2, where they're in the same movie but they don't have any scenes together, this should have been, like, at least an interesting thing to watch.
Right.
It could have been any two guys playing those parts, and it would have been...
And it would have been bad still.
Yeah, it would have been the same movie. It would not...
It probably would have been better, too. Nothing. Like, if they had, like, two, like, old guys who have been known for playing, like, detectives. Like, if it was, like, I don't know, James Garner and Dennis Farina, I would have enjoyed this movie more.
Yeah, or, like, Dennis Franz and, you know, somebody.
Yeah.
If this was a
Charles Napier.
That's the thing. If this was the reuniting of Dennis Franz and David Caruso, like I would have been, it would have made the movie more exciting. You know,
true.
I really want to see James Spader as one of these characters for some reason.
Yeah.
But which one? Maybe the David Finch.
Both,
the
maybe.
Both.
Trick
he could
photography.
Do it.
If Patty Duke could do it, then James Spader can do it.
One of just give that guy a wig.
Oh, but anyway,
that's
so
the
he's
bad
his evil
cop.
Twin. Is what you're saying? I'm going to agree with you guys. That was a bad movie.
Okay.
3 for 3. Don't watch it.
Don't watch it.
So we do have a few letters, but I'm going to hold off on that until next time because
the steward's not here.
The steward's not.
I read the letters after the recording?
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys just get disappointed when like they get read when one of you is not here.
I do.
So.
I like talking to the peeps.
Yeah. So I, like I apologize, replying. Megan. I don't want you to feel like a second class.
Were you
going to
talk?
Oh,
about
too late.
Talk about
I
the
already do.
Attention.
We did get some attention from a Norwegian gentleman.
Oh.
So I'm going to tease that.
Did you guys buy a bottle of champagne for $50?
Professional Norwegian gentleman, Sven Olsen.
Yeah, I do like bad movies. I don't want to offend our Norwegian
You've already
have.
It's too late.
Too late.
You should edit that out.
Yeah, he wrote something about us on a Norwegian forum. I don't think that it was about being Norwegian, but I know that the forum was in Norwegian, and I did a free translation of it online.
Oh, okay.
And it was mostly coherent.
It was mostly coherent. So in the future,
I'm going to blame the translation.
We'll talk a little bit about that. I'm teasing that. But right now, what we are going to talk about is a movie that we've seen recently that we actually enjoyed. Some sort of recommendation or failing a recommendation, just some sort of positive word to make us not feel like we're just bitter.
Just to cleanse the palate.
Yeah.
Okay.
To send you out singing a song.
Yeah.
Should I start?
Yeah, if you have one.
Well, yeah, just because I was just saying this to you professional gentlemen. I actually went to go see Julie and Julia with Meryl Streep and Amy Adams, who I'm sure anybody listening to this podcast is like, that's not for me.
They're like, oh, my girlfriend's making me go see that movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or they're like, I'm so glad I don't have a girlfriend, so yeah, I don't have to go see that movie.
They're like, oh, I wish
I'm
I had a girlfriend. Yeah. Where's Stuart? I'll go hang out with him. But
I can live vicariously through his large penis.
Oh, God.
And play some sort of fantasy football.
He's got everything.
Yeah.
But Meryl Streep in this movie is incredible. She does an incredible job of, I think, channeling Julia Childs without doing an impression of Julia Childs, and it's
She didn't have Julia Child.
She only had the one child.
Yeah.
Thank you. She didn't actually have any children.
What?
It's true.
That's the sort of tidbit that you can take out.
Failed as a woman then.
And she was a fascinating yeah, she was a fascinating lady, or at least Meryl Streep makes you believe that she was a fascinating lady. So I recommend that. Go to a matinee. Take it all in with the middle-aged ladies that surround you, or your gay best friend.
The youngest person.
By far the youngest person. Well, that and my friend that I went with, my gay best friend Joe, who's only 3 years older than I am. So
I know a gay guy named Joe. Maybe they're the same guy.
I bet they are. There just can't be too many of them.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know whether this is like actually a rousing recommendation. It's more of a this movie was a lot better than I expected recommendation. Which was, I saw Gran Torino recently.
Oh,
I still have to see
that. And based on the trailers, I was like, this is either going to be like a completely maudlin, like, you know, exploration of a racist learning to love, or it's going to be like a terrible latter-day revenge fantasy.
Set in Detroit.
And it was a little bit the first one towards the end of the movie. Like, the last 20 minutes gets a little like melodramatic in a bad way. I mean, melodrama can be fun, but like it goes a little over the top. But what I didn't realize was it's basically a comedy in a lot of ways. Like, if you ever want to see a movie that's just old Clint Eastwood growling at a series of people.
You know me. That's all I want to see.
I would, if it was a movie of Clint Eastwood sitting on a chair in his lawn just barking at passersby, that would be the movie I want to see.
That's basically it.
Oh, like, then I want to see this.
There's just like a series of characters that Clint Eastwood is presented with, and he's just like an old jerk to all of them. And he's literally, like, the first time you see him in the movie, he's introduced by him growling, like it's at his wife's funeral, like the camera pans over mourners, and they go into Clint Eastwood, and he's like, it's a fantastic performance from him, you know, it's grumpy old man.
Torino. Yeah. Grumpy old man Torino.
And so on that level, I really enjoyed it, so that's what I have to say about
that.
I'd
like to see that film.
Elliot?
I have a very rousing recommendation. Did I recommend A Matter of Life and Death already, or no?
No, but it sounds important.
Yeah, I guess.
It is A Matter of Life and Death.
Boom.
There was a movie I saw recently that I fell in love with called A Matter
of... Why don't you marry it?
I'm already engaged, asshole. Yes! I know. If I had met the movie before I'd met Danielle, it would be a different story.
I'm telling her.
Don't tell her I said that. She doesn't listen to this anyway.
That's what every girl wants to hear.
Well, she just knows this as the thing that I do where I come home late once every 2 weeks.
Yeah, so I'm the guy who's keeping you away from her in her mind.
Somebody's waiting up for me, too.
All right.
Aww, well, anyway.
Stuart.
This is A Matter of Life and Death is a British film from 1946. It was from the Powell and Pressburger team, who you may know as perhaps the greatest director-producer team in film history.
Oh.
Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger.
Emmerich, what a great
Who created such classics as The Red Shoes, Black Narcissus, The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp, I Know Where I'm Going. Michael Powell would go on to do Peeping Tom, but I don't think Pressburger was involved in that one. Really great movies. And this is one I hadn't seen yet, where David Niven is an RAF pilot. The movie opens with him about to crash his plane, and he makes his last communication with an American woman auxiliary officer who is manning the radio station in England, and they amazingly hit it off while he's plummeting to a fiery death. He decides to bail out of his plane. He'd rather jump than burn up, and it's so foggy that the man sent from heaven to get him misses him. So he awakes on the beach completely alive, not a scratch on him, and the guy who was sent, the angel was sent to get him, who was this kind of French fop who was killed during the French Revolution. So he's got a scarf around his neck that he won't take off because his head would fall off.
So it's a cross between a movie and an old campfire tale.
Yeah. Well, kind of, in a way. But he says to him, you have to come with me. And David Niven refuses to. He's in love with this woman. He doesn't want to go. The woman is good friends with a neurologist who thinks that this is all going on inside of David Niven's head. And David Niven says that I want to appeal to the highest court in heaven to get this so that I don't have to go. Like, I deserve to stay on Earth. I don't want to tell everything that happens. But, like, all the sequences set on Earth are in color, and all these sequences set in heaven are in black and white. It's just, like, a really, like,
sweet... Take that, heaven.
Take that, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a really sweet movie.
You're Kansas in this scenario.
But, like, it's such a well-made movie, and it's so good, and, like, it's very funny at times, and it's very touching at other times, and the way it's shot is just absolutely beautiful. Like, they never... They always are looking for interesting ways to shoot things that don't look crazy, but they just look interesting. There's something about the way that Powell and Pressburger in their movies shoot objects in this kind of mid-40s, very rich color that just looks beautiful. Like, everything has this very, like, firm three-dimension feel to it that a lot of movies don't get. It's, like, very painterly colors, but everything feels like it's in three dimensions, so... It was a really good movie. I highly recommend it.
That
was great.
Check that out.
Do it. It's called A Matter of Life and Death, but the DVD right now, it was released in America under the title Stairway to Heaven. So the DVD release, I think, is titled Stairway to Heaven.
Okay. I've heard it under that name.
Okay, but the original title was A Matter of Life and Death, which I think is a better title.
Yeah.
Because there's a song called Stairway to Heaven.
Which we all know. Don't play it, Dan.
No.
Don't play it.
Well, I'm not going to. I mean, the music rights alone would...
You pay for the music rights on this podcast.
I know. I don't use any copyrighted material. Although I don't think that the remaining members of Led Zeppelin would probably track me down.
No,
never know. Right. This professional gentleman in Norway found you. So,
So guys, I think we better wrap it up because I can hear Elliot's allergies kicking in the longer he's in my cat-filled apartment.
It's just the one cat, but it does feel cat-filled. Like, it's not like we're like pushing open the door because there's so many cats in that it's hard to open the door. We got to squeeze through these piles of cats.
Sorry, we have a sketch about that.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You didn't see that one? Oh,
I did not see that one.
It's for a later date.
Yeah. Elliot's got to come out and see another Mr. White Pants show.
Yeah, I saw last time I liked a lot.
Boom. Yeah.
Man, that Matt Koff, he sure is funny. He is the breakout star. He is the best guy on that stage. I gotta
tell you. All right, there
talent,
we go.
Like the sun, and then you got a couple, like I guess, rocks that are with
him.
Sure,
all right.
Just outshines the moon.
You know what? If I was a 6'4" guy with glasses and slightly strange looking, I would be funny too.
No, you guys are fine. You guys are fine. But that guy, he is.
Well, on that note,
so Stairway to Heaven.
I'd like to say good night. Or good morning, depending on when you're listening to this.
Or good afternoon.
For the podcast. Yeah. Really, it's to-order entertainment.
That's right.
Whenever you want it.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
On demand.
For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
And I'm Megan O'Neill.
And I remain Elliot Kalin.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
That was adorable. So
that
polite.
That was to you guys. Thanks, guys.
That's when things got weird. That's when Dan turned into a gay monster.